Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. YouTubers, hi, hello. Shout out to the cutters and the roamers and the listeners. Just want to make sure I get everyone involved. Very happy. Nikias, looking great. Nice haircut. I like the black shirt. It's going to be really appropriate. Depending on how this Eagles game goes, you can flip it either way. So, a joke so nice I had to use it twice. It's time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. And before we get into basketball things, I'll just very quickly note, Philly, I hope that I am in good grace. I'm hoping in a good mood on Thursday when we record the pod. Because, buddy, the way that this path has now opened up because the Dallas Cowboys just made a mess in their own bed and also their house and also their cars, et cetera, et cetera. Get it done, Philly. Get it done. You got to get it done. It's you have a chance to renew things. Anyway, we're not a football pod. We're going to talk about some basketball. Let's get into some news items before we dig on in on the W front. Since teams are able to talk to free agents on January 21st, we are right around the corner for WNBA free agency. Very quick note, got a couple of core designations, which, for those who aren't familiar, it's basically the WNBA's version of the franchise tag, exclusive negotiating rights. It's a one-year supermax. You can negotiate a different deal from there, but the main thing here is you are not going anywhere. If you are negotiating with anyone, it is with us, or at the very least, it's collaboration if we're going to trade you. So, as noted after, postseason pressers with the New York Liberty, Breonna Stewart getting the core designation, she's not going anywhere. She is going to be a member of the New York Liberty. We're going to see where the actual contract figure lands once free agency officially starts, but she's not going anywhere. What's interesting is what's happening in Washington. Elena Delladon also getting the core designation from the Mystics, but we did get some reporting from Jen Hatfield of The Next that a pair of league executives told her they do not expect Elena Delladon to be back in Washington. So again, she got the core designation, but that does not prevent her from being traded or, for her and Washington working together to get her where she wants to go, if that is the thing. Steve, if Elena is not back in Washington, if she doesn't just sign that one-year Supermax offer and stays put, what are some landing spots for her that you see?
Well, it's weird to talk about this because EDD has been such a staple for the Mystics, even with the injuries. I think she still has a chip on her shoulder looking to prove something. I believe she wants to win. So, Nikias, are you ready for EDD, Las Vegas Ace?
Not really, I guess is the thing. Like I would imagine as we're still waiting to hear about what Candace Parker actually plans to do. I think the most we've gotten is she wants to play if she's healthy enough. And now it's just waiting on the if she's healthy part. And so we're going to be waiting on that answer for a little bit. But the Aces would literally have cap space. But now with the core designation, I just wonder like what kind of trade would even be worked out to get that done. If that was going to be the landing spot for her, because naturally they're not trading Asia. They're not trading Jackie. They're not trading Kelsey. They're not trading Chelsea. So like, I don't think Alicia Clark and Kirsten Bell, if she gets the restricted free agent offer, I would imagine she does. Like, I don't think that does it. The Aces don't have their first round pick this year because of the De'Aaron Hamby investigation. So I don't even see what's workable to make that happen. Now, if she didn't get the core designation from Washington, that would probably be more of a possibility in which you would just continue to laugh at me for long-term listeners and also watch party hangouters. You would know why that would be funny. But with the core designation, like now I definitely don't see Vegas as like a viable option.
This man was crunching numbers. This man was doing math to make sure this couldn't happen. Now there's no way. There's absolutely no way. Well, let me annoy you some more.
Okay.
The Phoenix Mercury.
I guess my question would be, why?
Have you not seen the mindset coming out of Phoenix?
I mean, yes. They very much want to turn things around. New coach, new ownership. Like, I get it.
When they announced that practice facility, Matt Ishbia said he wanted to have it ready to start the 2024 season because he doesn't like things that take 2 years. Just keep that in mind.
It's not going to surprise me if the Mercury try to make a splash. I just don't know if EDD's it. And then just trying to envision that core of, I guess, Diana for another year, plus Sophie, plus EDD, plus Brittany Griner. Like, they would still need a point guard. And even then, if you get those four together, like, that's good. Do you feel better about that group or Connecticut?
I feel good about that group. That group can compete. Now, here, the question is, who do you think should go get EDD? That's now my question, considering I've offered two, and you threw them over the top rope. And you spent 2 years saying EDD's not a top 25 player in the W.
That is not what I said.
Oh, my bad. What was it?
Very quickly, because we're not going to spread lies to our YouTubers, the people that are new to us. Not going to let you push that propaganda, bud. Quick background. We're not going to hang here too much longer. Quick background. Steve and I, as we do it on the NBA side, on W side, we do awards things, All-Star, All-W, et cetera, et cetera. And much like the NBA, I have like a general games played minimum that I want players to hit before they hit either of my teams, et cetera. EDD, because she's missed a bunch of time, and over the past three seasons, I think it's 51 regular season games over the last 3 years for EDD. Last season, or the year before last, rather, she was very good. However, she missed a bunch of time. And so she didn't end up making one of my fake ballots for like the All-W teams because she didn't play enough for me. I was very intentional about saying it's not a talent deal. It is very much an availability deal. Steve just wanted to get this rant out of me. It worked. Well done. Well done. Anyway, as far as actual suitors for EDD, I mean, first team that pops to mind, honestly, is Chicago, where EDD has played before. They're going to have a bunch of cap space. If we're talking about new staff, new coaching staff, new leadership up top, Chicago also counts. They're going to have max space. They also have, if it's going to end up being a trade, so like they would still have like the Isabel Harrison salary, who's a very versatile big. Didn't get to play much last year because of injury, but like they have that salary slot. They want to move that. They could have more picks at their disposal, but we're not going to go down that road again today. But they can do something workable there. They want to get EDD in the room, slot her in the front court. So like that would make sense for me. But to your point, it says she wants to win. So if it's not there, does Connecticut have the pieces to make something work there? Olivia Nelson-Adoda, Natisha Heideman, pick Prosper. Is that the bit? I feel like that just winds up being too much not too much because there's a lot of talent. But if you're planning on bringing back DeJuana Bonner, if you're planning on bringing back Bree Jones, trying to work in Bree Jones, DeJuana, Alyssa Thomas, and Elena Deladon, like it takes pressure off of EDD if you want to bring her along slowly in the regular season. But does that put Bree Jones back in that sixth woman role that she graduated out of as she made an all-star team from the bench not too long ago? Like that might get a little dicey, but Chicago and Connecticut are probably the two teams that come to mind for me.
That's fair. I like the Chicago fit. My wild card, if you didn't say Connecticut, I was going to ask, does Minnesota move you?
Or is it that just feels very much like a we have to sell EDD on. We have Fee in the room, obviously, but we plan on bringing you in and we feel really good about this other free agent too. And it just becomes like a coup in free agency. That'd be my guess with Minnesota, but we shall see, man. Things are really going to heat up next week. I'm excited to see what happens on the W front. To the NBA side, the bad news for the Memphis Grizzlies is that they continue to deal with a whole lot of injuries, and I really feel bad for them. This tweet from the lead, listing all the injuries that the Grizzlies are dealing with right now. Ja Morant out for the year. Desmond Bane out for at least 6 weeks because of the ankle injury. Marcus Smart out at least 6 weeks with a finger injury. Jaren Jackson is day-to-day. Steven Adams is out for the year. Brandon Clark is still out from last year's injury. Derrick Rose is week-to-week, and Jake LaRavia is also out a minimum of 3 weeks. That is insane. I don't have much more to add to that. Outside of that is insane. I hope everyone heals properly. The silver lining, if we're trying to find some in this Grizzly season, shout out to Vince Williams for landing a 3-year, $7.9 million deal. Most guaranteed money ever to a player that was on a two-way contract. Averaged about 6 points, 5 boards, and 2 assists. Fun connector offensively, defensively. That dude is incredibly fun. He's very good already. And I would imagine there's even more upside on the defensive end as he continues to get playing time. I've had a lot of fun watching him. I know Steve has as well. Any quick thoughts on Vince Williams getting the deal?
Just a great find for Memphis. obviously injury-riddled campaign, as you talked about, but one of the hallmarks for them has been finding guys that step up and fit what they want to do on both ends. Vince Williams, he just keeps working. He just gets after it. He keeps working. Like, two possessions that stand out in my mind where I was all the way in. They play Phoenix. He sprints the floor hard in transition, misses a layup, gets his own rebound, kicks it out. They miss the three. He taps it back out again, despite being in a sea of purple in the paint, and they end up making a three. And the way he started the game against the Knicks the other night, gets a backdoor cut, Nikias, scores the layup, right into full court pressure, navigates the screen, then helps to get a steal on the weak side. In the first 30 seconds of the game, he did that.
Yeah, he's a tone setter.
He does the little things. You mentioned the connection. He just plays hard, cuts hard, gets off of it. We'll see if the three-point shot develops, but that's kind of what Memphis is going to have to do for this season, figure out who's going to be there for the next step. Obviously, you want to get healthy, but guys are going to have some opportunities, and Vince Williams has cashed in on his.
There you go. Props to Vince Williams, indeed. You mentioned the shooting, 34% from three this year. You want to see that trend upwards with how people defend him, but he does just about everything else. Averaging 7 rebounds per game as a starter, which is not something you typically hear from a wing. Just kind of speaks to the nose for the ball that he has. All right, we had a trade over the weekend. A fun one. Between the Detroit Pistons and the Washington Wizards, who, as we record on this Monday afternoon, I think the first MLK Day game is happening right now. But the Pistons and Wizards do face off today, so that's going to be fun to dig into whenever I get into that one. But the Washington Wizards acquiring Marvin Bagley, Isaiah Livers, and 2 conditional second-round picks in 2025 and 2026. The Detroit Pistons getting Danilo Gallinari and Mike Muscala. Initial thoughts on that one, were you – I'm not sure who was anticipating that one. Are those two teams talking, period? I feel like, well, at least for me, I've kind of viewed Washington as the contender goes to the Wizards and say, hey, what can we get for a Tyus Jones or DeLon Wright, et cetera, et cetera. And for Detroit, hey, we will take this contract if you want some of our vets, or a similar deal. We're a contender. What can we get for insert vet here? I didn't anticipate a Pistons-Wizards swap of talent. And so this one initially caught me off guard. But beyond the off-guardedness, I guess, if I can speak, what were some of your initial thoughts on this trade?
Well, it's probably just trading picks for expiring contracts for Detroit and opening up space to be a part of a trade later. But I like the move for a couple reasons. One, you made a decision. You finally made a decision. You're moving in a direction that's different than the one that you're in. I think that's important. Now, you can argue, Nikias, that the idea of trading picks to get Marvin Bagley and then having to trade picks to get off of Marvin Bagley is not ideal, but that's neither here nor there. You get rid of the logjam.
Oh, I was just going to say it's actually here. I am not a fan of how Detroit handled that, but continue.
It's like the 55th pick, wasn't it? Anyways, you got rid of the logjam of bigs who can play at the five and are all in like each other's way, and you feel like you need to play them all. So you're trying to do two big lineups, or you're playing short stints and no one develops and gets better. And every summer is a challenge. See which big has figured out how to shoot threes. No more of that. It's over. I think overall, you get reputation shooting. Just from a pure basketball perspective, Detroit's 29th in three-pointers attempted tonight at 30.7. They're 28th in three-point percentage, 34.4. Gallinari and Muscala as a base are going to be people that defenses at least consider or think about or can make a defense pay. And the real big part of that is should open up the playbook more for you and boost some of those movement sets that you're trying to run. So you should have, you know, Muscala can pick and roll, pick and pop. He can be a hub. Gallo can space. You know, he's going to get into his old man game. So I think that's probably the biggest bonus. And I think you probably clear a pathway to play smaller lineups and get some of these lineups where we mentioned it in the last rookie report. Go ahead and click the link. You can use Asar Thompson as a screener now.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit more naturally than you had before, because you have a little bit more flexibility. Wiseman has a clear path as far as, okay, what are you going to do for us every single night? So I think that just kind of helps shake things up for the Pistons. What did you think?
I think for me, I'm with you, and that's a really good point about being able to go smaller now and unlock some of the rolling things with Asar Thompson, as mentioned on the last rookie report. The screening usage for him on ball has been up, and they've gotten some fruitful things. At least statistically, they've gotten some good things out of it. And so now that you have a true spacing five in Mike Muscala, who neither him or Gallo have shot well from three this season on low volume, but historically they have been very good shooters. And you hope that with some of the guard play, as you get Cade back, with Jaden Ivey being able to get downhill the way that he does, you have more natural pick and pop opportunities or more natural catch and shoot opportunities. Maybe you see that bounce back and you just make it easier on your young guys. Like, I think ultimately we've been talking about Cade for the last 3 years. He needs space. He needs room to operate with. Before even digging into what his, you know, strengths or weaknesses may be as a basketball player, give him room to either prove those weaknesses wrong or whatever the case may be. Getting an actual stretch big in the room is exciting to me. It might be Mike Muscala for 14 minutes a game. Like, I remember how excited I was because I've been on the Mike Muscala plus minus monster train and everything he was doing at OKC. He goes to Boston, plays a little bit, and he's just not playing anymore. It's like, well, guess I was loud about that one. But he may have more room and opportunity in Detroit. Like, I'm not sure how fruitful this portion of it will be, but like, you do, even if you want to stay big, like, you can play Wiseman and Muscala together offensively and keep those role opportunities available for James Wiseman. Use Mike Muscala as a spacer. Like, that option exists. For me, it's been kind of hard to peg Gallo's portion in this because I agree just from an on-court perspective. He is a guy that has proven he can shoot. Not shooting well this year, but he can knock down shots. He can get into some of those isolations. Can post up mismatches. He just feels like, we're trading you here, but we're going to work out a buyout very quickly. Just because of like what his salary number is. I think it's a shade under 7 mil. So if he does get the buyout, like any playoff team can sign him versus if he had a bigger contract number and some of those like second apron teams wouldn't be able to pick him up. So like that feels more like Gallo probably won't be there. I'd be surprised if Gallo plays often, if at all, in Detroit. Mike Muscala, even if he ends up being traded before the deadline, it felt like he'll actually get some runway in Detroit. So I'm more excited about the Muscala portion than the Gallo portion. For Washington, it's an interesting bet. I do think Marvin Bagley is talented, like very quietly career high inside the arc in terms of efficiency. He is a really good roller. He is a vertical threat. And so now between him and Daniel Gafford, you should have 48 minutes of I will threaten the rim with my rolls. I am a lob target. I can take some pressure off of some of my guards, especially if we set up some empty corner stuff like Wes Unseld Jr. likes to do. At some point, you got to commit to the defense, though. I think is kind of where I land with that portion. So, like, I don't want to get too excited about it because I do still worry about that portion. But even that's kind of muted because who was Washington's trustworthy backup center before the Bagley acquisition?
It was Gallo.
Like, it wasn't like Muscala was playing a ton. And so even then, like, it feels like he's going to get more burned than Muscala did. And Gallo eventually found his way out of the rotation. So, like, they are replacing more of those minutes with Bagley. So, like, he should be a slight plus there just in terms of what they're sending out versus what they're getting. But, like, looking at the vision, his next year is really going to be the flyer for him. He'll be the expiring next season, 12.5 mil. We'll see if he solidifies himself in Washington's front court rotation or if he just becomes a trade piece again next year. We'll see where it goes from there. Going back to Detroit, though, because this was very much let's clear the Bagley second year money off the books. From Keith Smith, they can get up to, I think, between $50 and $66 million in cap space this offseason, which is a lot. I do wonder what pathway they're going to take with that money, if they're actually going to try to make a big splash, as Detroit has been rumored with guys like Zach LaVine, has been rumored with guys like Pascal Siakam in the trade market, which I have my thoughts about that, but it's notable that their names are with these big talents. Is this actually going to be a, hey, we got to do something offseason for Detroit? Or are they going to continue to be more conservative, just try to, you know, serve as a dumping ground, get more picks in the building, et cetera, et cetera? So I just want to keep an eye on that part for Detroit.
I think they'll make a move. And I think these days movement is more geared towards trades than just pure cap space. We sign a free agent. So I think they're trying to position themselves to be in that game, which I understand, give themselves some flexibility that way. Back to Bagley in Washington. That was the weird part of the trade for me, Nikias, where it felt like I was just copy and pasting what I thought about Detroit getting him in the first place. It's low risk. You got some picks to get him. There should be a much clearer path for him to get minutes and produce. And we know when Bagley gets minutes, he usually produces. Hopefully the defense can grow and he has enough time to be able to grow that part of his game so he can just really enhance and continue his career. Let me ask you a question real quick.
Okay.
Whose ceiling do you believe in more right now? Christian Woods or Marvin Bagley's?
Oh, I don't like that. I mean, I guess it's Wood by default. Just like he hasn't really proven to be the really impactful player on good team yet. But like we've at least seen the self-creation chops from him in addition to the pick and roll stuff. And like we haven't really gotten that from Bagley to a large degree. I don't really love either of them defensively. Though Christian Wood has had some fun flashes in LA. I don't want to take that away from him. But I guess Wood? I don't love that, though. It's a devious question.
Tough question, I know. For me, I just think, can he enhance that pick and roll game? Can we show a little bit more versatility? Can we defend? If he does that, I think, A, he probably helps Washington. B, he probably becomes someone they could trade if they feel like they need to improve or add something to their room. But that's the key to me. I did find it a little funny. It's Poole, Kuzma, and Bagley together all at the same time. But Washington can score, and he can score. So fit should work.
Yeah, we shall see. We shall see. Let's very quickly, since we didn't get to do so, we recorded on Wednesday, so we missed the All-Star update on Thursday. I'm going to do that very quickly right now. The starters are static in the West. It's still Steph, Luka in the backcourt, LeBron, KD, and Jokic in the front court. Though, if you care about this portion, Jokic passing KD in votes is interesting. I didn't anticipate like the fan vote going that way, even though I think objectively Jokic has had a better year. So that part was interesting. Also notable, Devin Booker entered the top 10 in West guards. He's now ninth. Austin Reeves falling out there. On the East, four of the five starters staying the same. Tyrese Halliburton, still your leading backcourt vote getter. Jason Tatum, Giannis, Joel Embiid in the front court. Trae Young passing Damian Lillard, had a 35,000+ vote lead on the second return. So Trae currently is an all-star starter. We will see if that holds. I have more thoughts on Atlanta a little bit later in the pod, but Julius Randle entering the top 10 in East front court voting with Kyle Kuzma falling out. Paolo Banchero now at 9. Mikal Bridges slipped down to 10. There is still no Scottie Barnes, so my pleas slash rant on Toronto and Canada as a whole, I guess it did not work. Maybe Darko calling Scotty the face of the league may help. Maybe that will invigorate the fan base. It's something. I don't know. We shall see. Derek White passing LaMelo for 7th. Drew passed DeMar DeRozan for 9th. Any all-star thoughts or any updates to your personal teams?
Outside of the East backcourt, it all feels locked in. Mm-hmm. If Trae gets voted in, like it's going to be very interesting to see how the players and media handle the East backcourt. Because if Trae gets voted in, I think that the numbers get pretty tight. The numbers get pretty tight if you're Derek White. Because you got Donovan Mitchell, you got Maxey, you got Dame, you got Brunson. Although, side note, Dame hitting a game winner the day before the votes count 3-for-1. Kind of funny.
Well timed. It may indeed be Dame time. I must say, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. And again, I want to save my deeper Atlanta thoughts for later in the pod, but like I would be surprised if Trae's able to hold on to the starting spot. One, because as you mentioned, like Dame getting that, like Milwaukee just may be invigorated after that one. And so like today might be enough to move Dame back past Trae for just the fan vote. And again, it's 50% fan vote, 25% for the players, 25% for the media. But then you just kind of zoom out to what the Atlanta season has been. I would be surprised if Trae gets in, even though I feel like he's had a tremendous season overall. I was pleasantly surprised to see him get into the all-star starters, but I don't know if that's going to hold once you factor in everybody else coming in, but we shall see on that front. I guess the only other thing I will ask you, just going back to the West, considering Golden State slide, considering Shea continued to be ridiculous this year, any chance at all, do you think like the fan vote gets to Shea over Steph? Because if I had to guess, like I think the media is going to get Shea over Steph. I think the media will vote. I think Luka and Shea is going to be your backcourt for the media. I don't know where the players go with Shea versus Steph. And there is still a little bit of a gap between the fan vote, but I do wonder, like, will there be a last second push here with what OKC's doing? And just the general Golden State fans are not very happy with their team right now. And so I wonder if there's any kind of letdown that maybe opens the door for like the fan vote to also go to Shea. But you say no on that front.
No. And well, I mean, the thing I was going to have, I had in my notes, like there's a chance Shea may not get voted in, but those are some mighty big numbers he's putting up next to Luka and Steph. So I was impressed by that. I don't know if it's able to flip just because Luka is Luka, Steph is Steph. Fans are the fans. I mean that with no disrespect. I just think Steph will gather those votes just naturally because of what he does. Now, where it gets interesting is what do the players do with Shea and Steph and Luka? And what does that order look like? I'm very intrigued to see how that goes down. I think the media is going to have Shea in with Luka, but yeah. I still would be shocked if Steph wasn't a starter.
We shall see. And like, even if, again, if Shea isn't a starter, he's absolutely making the team. If Steph isn't a starter, he's absolutely making the team. And Luka just doesn't have anything to worry about. So he's just kind of entrenched in this for the starting backcourt. So props to him. Okay, let's go back to one of our regular segments since it feels like it's just been like theme city for us as of late. Teams that impress. Steve, who's the team that's caught your eye as of late?
Well, I wanted to talk about Oklahoma City real quick. Just a couple things on the Thunder. And just wanted to point out how much pressure they keep on defenses. And when you watch the Thunder, I want y'all to watch the spacing. I want you to watch their cutting. I want you to see how they're consistently working to relocate and keep pressure on defenses. Watch the timing of their cuts to clear space. If it's a pick and pop, all of a sudden you see a wing clear. If you see them stay flat, I want you to notice that because that's one of the biggest parts of why OKC is still up and making this push. They're very good. They're going to drive the ball all the time. Shea's been tremendous. Chet has been really good and a great fit for them and elevated them. Jalen Williams, we know their lineups. They have two-way versatility. They can play smaller if they need to. They can go big if they need to. It's fantastic. But the little things, as teams try to figure out how to put OKC in a box and the counters that they're working to find, have been the most fun for me. So when you watch them, look at the angles of their screens and look how much pressure they put on teams in that way. It's not just the amount of guard-guard screens that they run or that they set. It's how they do it as well. They love brush screens. They love slipping out of screens. They also love to come out and set them flat. So I'm not picking a side. I'm just going to come up here. I'm right here. I'm stepping up. It's a quick decision for the defender on both ends. If you're guarding the ball, you don't know which way they're going unless, you know, you can dictate terms early, but that's why the speed of their offense works because I don't have a chance to really know this is coming. So I'm just defending one-on-one. If I'm guarding the screener, I don't know which way it's going either. And I don't have enough time to tell you first left, 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 left. They slip out. And now you see what happens, especially as a ball handler, you can go the way where the space is and attack that way. Look at how, if they have someone set up in the corner, whoever's in the corner will just come fly up and set a screen randomly. And so as you're trying to like just figure things out defensively, they keep changing it. In my mind, I'm always like, okay, switching can hurt them. You show help, you help recover, you give yourself a chance. They just keep finding counters, Nikias. So as soon as you think you've handled one portion of it, you feel comfortable, it's something else. You feel good about how you're handling the drives, here come the cuts. You feel good about how you're handling pick and roll, here comes a guard-guard screen. Or here's Chet reminding you that, hey, I can pick and pop. Or if you switch, I can punish your guard in the post. You feel good about your early help against Shea? Fantastic. Here's a post up. It's tough.
That's such a moving target. And just to quickly bounce off of what you said, I want to supply some numbers to kind of supplement the analysis that you brought there. As you mentioned how they clear the wings and just in general what OKC does in an effort to clear space and make their drives even more forceful, put your defense in even more of a bind. So Second Spectrum tracks what percentage of possessions that help defenders are present on drives. Lowest mark in the league, the OKC Thunder. Second lowest, the team that we're going to talk about, the Utah Jazz. third lowest, a team that we have talked about this year, the Boston Celtics. Between the personnel and where they spaced them, and to your point, the way that they cut and move, they put you in such a, you come into a game, I want to load up because they are going to do this, this, and this. And because of where they space and the angles of the picks that they set and the way that they time their cuts, you can't load up the way that you want to. And as you were talking about how flat, you know, when they're setting those flat screens for the guards, you think about the guards who are receiving those screens. It's Shea who has like the herky jerkiness to his game anyway. You already can't get a beat on him. And he's already really good at decelerating and reaccelerating and going, getting to different angles. Now you throw in the fact that, okay, I don't even know where I want to shift my body in an effort to stay attached to this dude. I am naturally off balance, and now Shea can further lead the dance. And if you send help from anywhere, it's either going to be a cut or a wide open shot, or it's just a kick and it's a swing, or it's a kick and it's another drive. And now we are even further off balance. It's really it's simple in a way, but it's also just masterful stuff. And I really love watching him play. And then even quickly on that note, Shea, again, remains, in my opinion, just the best driver in basketball right now. In terms of volume, he's certainly up there. And teams just haven't been able to find a good answer. Jalen Williams has been losing his mind. Like, we've talked so much about Shea and the MVP push, which your bold prediction isn't looking so bold at this rate. Shea is absolutely hooping. But we've talked so much about Shea. We've talked so much about Chet Holmgren, who should be, if not a heavy favorite, at the very least, like the slight front runner for Rookie of the Year right now, depending on how you feel about Wimby and the numbers that he's putting up in San Antonio. Check out the old man, the three things we talked about it. But Chet's, at minimum, he's top two in Rookie of the Year. Jalen Williams just quietly, since Christmas, averaging 20 points per game while converting over 60% of his shots, period, end dot. And has been one of the most effective drivers in basketball this year, and especially since Christmas, like a 9-10 game sample. Over 1.2 points per possession on trips featuring a Jalen Williams drive. He's nasty in his own right. You have the schematic fun that makes it difficult to load up and difficult to get a beat. And then you just think about the fact that we can't put our best defender on Jalen Williams. And if we do want to get fun with our personnel and we want to put a big guy on Shea and we want to put a wing on Chet so we can try to neutralize those two, you're talking about your third guy at best on Jalen Williams, who is now a tank. Like, driving style, he's always been like a strength-based driver. Has some craft to him, but the strength-based stuff stands out. That popped in his rookie year. Now he's even stronger and bigger than he was last year, and you're putting at best your third best guy on him. He is just pummeling dudes when he drives to the basket. Ah, this Thunder team is just a whole lot of fun, man. It's just a lot of fun.
I'm with you on Jalen Williams. Can't wait for you to push him in the most improved conversation. I'll be keeping an eye on that, putting that in my docket. I also thought when you talked about Shea, I thought you were going to say shin angle for a second there. I'm glad you did not. So we're good there.
I want to throw some clips in post-edit. I can.
Okay. All right. So two other things in the Western Conference before we get to Utah. Denver's coming. Don't forget about Denver. Mm-hmm. And two, Minnesota. I have a fun fact for you.
Okay.
14 times this season, Minnesota has held their opponent to 40% shooting or worse. Most by any team in the league this season. I believe OKC is second with 9. The Wolves are 13-1 when that happens.
Woo. Yeah, like
I'm just saying.
It's one of those things where we might just be taking the Minnesota run for granted, because at least a lot of people are just kind of waiting on the inevitable fall off or whatever the case may be. Like, you're seeing the growth from Ant still. And when he decides he wants to take over on either end, he more often than not can just do that. I've really enjoyed Rudy Gobert defensively this year. Karl Anthony Townsend is working his tail off defensively, in addition to the drives getting better, still being able to knock down shots. While we're on Minnesota, like, I don't want to pour too much water. I'm just keeping my eye on Jaden McDaniels. As you know firsthand, I am a very big fan of Jaden. It has been an uneven year for him, as he's been trying to get his feet under him. He technically didn't start the season. He was out the first couple of games. I would love for him to find his footing on both ends. Well, obviously, you kind of point to the shot. That's going to be a swing thing in the playoffs. But even defensively, like, some of the foul trouble that's kind of perked up for him. at full tilt, like, he is just one of, like, the five or six best perimeter defenders in basketball. And that's conservative. What Jaden can do, like, go watch film of that Orlando game from not too long ago. Jaden McDaniels can be legitimately locked down. And I think if Minnesota gets a more consistent version of him on both ends, there's another level that this Wolves team can hit. And they're already top seed in the West. So I want to keep an eye on Jaden, but this has been a really fun season. Also, I guess I'm going to shoot myself in the foot here. But I was going to say, like, I didn't mention him or talk about him enough when we did our initial awards check-in for Sixth Man of the Year with Naz Reid, because I have him on the short list. He's really good. He is really good. Like, we're going to end up doing, like, a Wolves deep dive at some point this season. But, like, I want to, like, legitimately devote some time to what Naz Reid has done this year. I feel like I've sold him short, and I'm a fan of his. He's been really good off the bench for them. And he's helped make those two big lineups work when he subs in for either Rudy or Cat. The drives, the shooting, he's just, Naz is a freaking beast, man. I just wanted to put that on video.
Did you want to play us some music, Nikias?
Yeah, let's get into some sweet, sweet jazz. To the Utah Jazz, who on the season, 21-20, they're now ninth in the West. They've won their last five. Per Cleaning the Glass, they're 19th in offense, 22nd in defense, 24th in net rating. Not that great. Since December 13th, aka the game that Colin Sexton entered the starting lineup, they are 14-4. They are 8th in offense, they are 12th in defense, they are 10th in net rating, 8th in half-court offense, 5th in half-court defense. And 5th in half-court defense really stands out, both in terms of just the overall personnel. Walker Kessler, incredible interior defender. Would he make an all-defense team for you this year? Like, it feels like he's like a line below that group overall, even though he's been really good. So it's not like Walker's been bad. But, like, would you say he's been a top 10 defender this year? Like, I probably can't get there this year.
He'd be up there for me. Yeah. I think the positionless nature is going to make it interesting, mm-hmm. but he'd be up there.
Yeah. So at least worthy of discussion, but you wouldn't say firmly he's top five, et cetera, et cetera.
But, like, never off the top of my head now.
Yeah. So, like, they don't have the elite of the elite defensive personnel. And then, on top of that, Walker hasn't been starting as of late. And so the fact that you could have this stretch and still end up a top-five half-court defense is pretty impressive. And the offense, like, I remember shouting them out a while ago while they were, like, in the low 20s in offensive rating. I was like, hey, just a quick hat tip after I did whoever my initial team was. It was, like, 10, 12 minutes of that team. And then, like, hey, before we move on, just wanted to say quickly, I really enjoyed watching Utah on offense. Like, the results aren't there right now, but I love the process of what they're doing, how to use their bigs, et cetera, et cetera. We're now seeing the full breadth of that. And I kind of want to start with the offense with Utah because it has been a ton of fun, especially since Lauri Markkanen has just been back and in full tilt. But just very quickly on the way that they're using their players, like the commitment to space, just watching Walker Kessler on the wing, it's like, he can't shoot. Why is he out there? And it's not even, because like you'll see a non-spacer in the corner. And it's like, all right, quick pass. We're going to do like the Draymond like handoff. You get that stuff. But like they trigger so much of their offense through him on the wing. And it feels unconventional, but they do a really good job of doing that and then spacing beyond that. And between Walker's usage when he's in, with John Collins now starting the pick and roll / pick and pop usage that he can have there. Lauri Markkanen, you can move him all around the chessboard. Colin Sexton, the fun with his drives to pull up returning back to form. Jordan Clarkson can get busy whenever he wants to. Kelly Olynyk, incredibly creative offensively, shooting 39% from three over the stretch, while also being a fun handoff hub. You can use him as a pick and roll guy, pick and pop threat. You can't really get a beat on Utah. And that's probably the most fun. That's probably the most fun part of Utah for me. Commitment to space, the tempo they play with, and just how random complementary that they are offensively. You can't really load up against them. I mentioned the help defender present stat with their drives. And then you go to the guard room. And something that we talked about before the season was, I'm not sure how I feel about the guard room. Like, I feel like Collins a solid player. But, like, there's no true traditional table setter. And, like, what is that going to mean for, like, the John Collins acquisition, et cetera, et cetera. But the one thing I noted was that they do have a guard room that can get downhill. And with the way that they space the floor, that's kind of all they need to puncture the defense and get you in rotation. You don't need a traditional like top 10 point guard. You got guys that get downhill and threaten your defense with the way that they already spread you thin. You can create advantages and then they have smart enough players to maintain those advantages. And that's where it's been fun, where Colin Sexton's averaging nearly 22 points and 5 assists since December 13th. Jordan Clarkson's averaging 20 points and 6 assists since then. And so, like, you add all that together, teams can't really get a beat on them. Then defensively, it's what Walker's been able to do off the bench. Chris Dunn continues to be nasty at the point of attack. Very much having fun with the Chris Dunn season. Simone Fontecchio is defending his tail off at the wing, and he's taking on some incredibly tough assignments and holding his own there. And then schematically, there are so many different types of zone that the Utah Jazz are throwing out at people. Like, imagine my glee slash surprise turning on a Jazz game that I might have missed the night before and genuinely seeing a box in one. It's like, okay, well, this is different. This is interesting. It's a box in one with Chris Dunn defending like a big wing. And it's like, okay, this is weird. Fine. Let's see how this goes. And it works. And so, like, they have really just found their stride on both ends of the floor. Just the general creativity, I think, for Utah is what's made this a fun stretch for me. Like, I don't know if they are 14-4 good, like, just overall. Are they like a 70-plus win rate team? But they have certainly found their stride, and they are firmly in the thick of this play-in and soon-to-be playoff race if they keep playing like this. So I just wanted to give Utah their flowers for what they've been able to do.
Well, flowers indeed you did give. I think the one thing with Utah you have to notice, 14-5 at home. Still, if I remember my research correctly, it's been 10 seasons since Utah has had a losing record at home. So they have that going for them. I thought that road trip they just came off was going to be the end. Or not the end, but it was going to be a, you know, a nice little step back. Go to Boston, go to Philly, go to Milwaukee. They went 2 out of 3, now have a 6-game homestand. The biggest thing for me, starting lineup of Colin Sexton, Chris Dunn, Simone Fontecchio, Lauri Markkanen, and John Collins, 8-1. Since they made that lineup change, they're averaging 30.7 assists per game. Their last 5 games, Nikias. At Philly, 46 made field goals, 30 assists. At Milwaukee, 47 made field goals, 33 assists. Against Denver, 46 made field goals, 34 assists. Against Toronto, 52 made field goals, 34 assists. Against the Lakers, 42 made field goals, 28 assists. That's 68.2% of their field goals assisted. Now, that's not always a sign of good things because the Spurs do lead the league, but they're moving the ball. And I think what you touched on with their personnel and how they use it, that lineup in specific has helped open Utah back up to what they like to do, what they like to be, what Will Hardy likes to do as far as we have guys who can do different things. Let's flip it on you. You know, it's not just the spacing point, even though it's delightful to see. They keep their zones clear, but look at how they use different guys. You can really now unlock the versatility of Lauri Markkanen. You mentioned they're running off handoffs, off screens, off pin downs. He'll operate in pick and roll. But now you can use Fontecchio as a screener. Or you can use Chris Dunn as a screener or a hub. Mm-hmm. You can run a stagger for Fontecchio. Yeah, you can run a stagger for Fontecchio with Collins spaced on the other side. And now not only is this left side clear, the only low help is the bigs on the other side of the court. Dunn and Sexton aren't traditional point guards, but they can initiate offense or be used off ball in different ways. I think they're willing and aggressive drivers, which fits with that lineup. And for me, it's just about the fit. It's about understanding what the strengths of your players are and using that to your advantage. Like, quiet is kept. We've talked a lot about John Collins over his career. What's his best position? How do we unlock him? Can he play the 5? Defense might not be good enough at the 5. Well, can he space? He can space, but now all he's doing is spacing. Very sneakily, they just pivoted to John Collins at the 5. And all of a sudden, oh, yeah, he's a roller.
Yeah, he can do that. Yeah.
Oh, dribble handoffs and he's rolling. He's not just in the corner. Look at this. That's fun. But for me, my mind just goes to, like, the roster construction. And I go back to, like, last year with Utah, where they found a lot more than they expected to at the beginning. And then we're like, easy. But that was keyed on Jared Vanderbilt and his usage and how they could use him in different ways. And then, hey, they're using all these bigs together. They're getting back to more of that. And I just like the way that the lineups balance each other out. Because now you mentioned Walker Kessler's defense. He comes in, helps the defense out. You can still get some of the usage of Laurie if he's still in the game. Now you have your bench. His defense helps out Jordan Clarkson, Keyonte George, Kelly Olynyk. Mm-hmm. And you still have some of that same offensive versatility in the second unit. Although you probably feel, I guess, quote unquote, better about the scoring from the guards to a degree. Mm-hmm. But you got Olynyk, you can use in a bunch of different ways. You kind of keep that same lineup integrity, our identity, what we want to do every night. You take some pressure off of Keyonte George. So he can just go out there and play free, as opposed to feeling like I have to do X, Y, and Z. Yeah. It's a different vibe. And to your Walker Kessler space point, they not only get a lot of action out of him when he's spaced, look at the timing of when he does it. He's looking for someone to screen almost at all times. Like, all right, well, I'm not doing anything. So, hey, you want to come up? I'll screen for you. You need a screen? I'll flash right here. You want to cut? I'm good to go. But having those kind of multiple actions on each side just helps that impact. So I think that's probably been the most fun part of watching Utah. It's just like, okay, I see what they're trying to get to, and they're trying to balance it out throughout their whole roster.
Yeah. And then just very quickly on that point, something that you've brought up with other teams and other players, like even just the value of Walker being, the fact that you even have to think about Walker on the perimeter, he's not a shooter. Even if he's just stationed on the wing, you have in the back of your mind, crap, they may flow into a handle, he may screen for somebody, et cetera, et cetera. You're also just lengthening what that rotation may be for the center that's guarding him still. It's something that you've hammered home in my brain, and now when I see it, it's like, oh, that makes sense. That's why they have this guy stationed here. So even you have that element of the offense working for you for Utah. And as I said a little bit earlier, like, I don't know if they're 14-4 good or 70 win rate good or whatever the case may be. That's also been kind of the wild part of watching Utah play like this, then also digging into some of the numbers. It's not like Utah's blowing teams away because they're shooting 42% from three over the last 3 weeks. They're 15th in three-point percentage since December 13th. They are not blowing teams out of the water. Like you mentioned the assist stat, they're fifth in assist rate during the stretch. They're 20th in turnover rate. They're not particularly taking care of the ball at a super high level right now. And the offense has still been good. You know where Utah ranks in transition offense during this stretch?
Fourth.
30th.
Oh.
They are dead last in transition points per possession since December the 13th. And they have still been on balance a top 10 offense over the last 18 games. That's scary. There is low-hanging fruit for this team to grab. And this is in the midst of, like you mentioned up top, like the schedule coming up. Like, huh, they playing well, but they about to go through this. Now they're about to go into the homestand with low-hanging fruit to grab. Like, Jordan Clarkson hooping, he's not shooting well from three right now. I mentioned the 39% clip for Kelly Olynyk. Like, he's taking, like, two attempts right now. Yeah, there are probably going to be some games where he can get 4, 5, 6 up and shoot well. Like, Laurie has been very, very, very good this year. Like, have we gotten to Laurie's averaging 30 points per game for 2 weeks stretch yet? No. We haven't. I love Keyonte going to the bench and taking some of the pressure off of him. We didn't mention him in the rookie report. Well, this rookie report, we mentioned him in the first one. But, like, keeping an eye on his drives, he seems to be getting a little bit more comfortable. I still have my brow raised with what some of the drives look like when he gets deep into the paint. But, like, what happens if things start to slow down for him like they tend to do with rookie guards? What if the pull-up, as he was a dangerous scorer in college, what if the pull-up bounces back to what a lot of people expected it to be while he's playing with the second unit? It wouldn't surprise me at all if we check in 2 weeks and the best offense over the last 2 weeks has been the Utah Jazz, because now shots are falling at a higher clip. It's not like they're doing anything like super unsustainable from like a number standpoint. So like that's encouraging to me. Again, I have a lot of fun, but you put Chris Dunn on the basketball court, I'm just going to have fun defensively. But you add that plus Walker Kessler on the interior, plus Simone Fontecchio having some fun from the wing room, plus we will throw out different coverages on top of that. And they're doing so with personnel that you may not think is elite. Sign me up for what Utah is doing right now. They are playing some really good basketball. Any closing thoughts on Utah?
Closing thoughts there. Before we get to your long anticipated Hawks rant, I want to break in, not with news, but I'm going to continue the segment of Steve tells Nikias things while we're recording. Philadelphia 76ers are beating Houston 47-25 with 7 minutes in the second quarter right now. Joel Embiid with 13 points in 12 minutes. It appears the Rockets attempted to go small. Dylan Brooks and Jayshon Tate both have two fouls.
Ah, well, feeling better about our answer on the old man, the three things about teams that may slip.
Two plugs.
Gravy. Hey, one more is tic-tac-toe. But, wow, thank you for the cut-in. Appreciate you. Say it up top. We're probably going to be recording during the first game. Then I'm going to be done before the second game starts, so that's fine. So normally when we do the segment, if you've been a long time dunker, or even if you're joining us this season with YouTube, thank you. It's typically teams that impress, teams that make us think, then we get into player shout-outs. I have one team on the mind right now. And that is indeed the Atlanta Hawks. So a little bit of background since we're late into the pod. December 26th, I think, was the recording date when we did the bold predictions pod with JJ.
Yes.
And we recorded that the day after Christmas. Steve had the Schaefer MVP. I had the bold prediction, kick off the pod and said, you know, it's a bold prediction pod, so it's supposed to be something unlikely. But I called my shot. I was like, you know what? I feel good about this one. I think Jalen Johnson's going to save Atlanta season. Had this whole argument how well Trey and Jalen have played together, what the Hawks have looked like when Trey and Jalen on the floor together, the top five offense defending at, like, I think the 15th best rate in the league with those two on the floor together. It's like, okay, if they can get elite offense, average defense with these two, they get to 500 or finish a game or two above 500, they save the season, they push all of the let's make major moves conversations into the offseason. Recorded on December 26th, pod released on January 1st. It is January 15th. I am already ready to press the eject button on that take. I am so annoyed and saddened by watching the Atlanta Hawks play basketball right now. This defense, Steve, I understand that, like, in a literal sense, is not the worst defense in the league. They are 27th overall in defensive rating per clean the glass that filters out garbage time. And even since that pod, or since December 26th, I think they're 27th in defensive rating. So they're not literally the worst defense in basketball. But watching them, it feels like the worst defense in basketball. This is not a team I feel at all. Outside of the stray Trent Forrest picks up a guy full court possession. This isn't a physical defense. They don't blitz as aggressively as they were earlier in the year in pick and roll, but they'll still bring Clint up to the level. Poor Clint. He just isn't moving super well. And then you think about how offenses are now spacing their guys against Atlanta. It's like, oh, well, if they're going to put two to the ball, let's just make sure our small guys are in the corners. And let's see how well they affect things at the rim, or if they even rotate down on time. And God bless you if you say, you know what? Let's get even more creative. How about we come up to set this screen? Let's flip this angle at the last second and go to the other side. Let's see if they can figure out who's the low man now. Possession after possession after possession in that Washington game in particular, to where both guys from the corners are sinking in to see who's picking up the role. And it's just wide open shot after wide open shot. The transition defense is an abomination. I'm just like, dog, it can't be this. It can't be this. We can't have a lack of pressure. Teams can just jog up the floor and not worry about anything, run a pin down. Whoever's defending the guy coming off the pin down is just a beat late because they're staring at the ball being walked up the floor. So now they're late. They get screened. Now you commit two to the ball. Now it's a pass. Now it's another swing. It's an open shot. And it's just like, dude. At a certain, like, I foul someone. Foul someone. Like a not, we ain't not going to the 80s, 90s to put somebody on the dirt, like nothing like that. But like, make contact with someone. You can't be this late consistently defensively. You can't just let people waltz up the court on you. You can't let people manipulate your defense as easily as they are. And it just stinks because now this is coincided with now the offense has fallen off a cliff over the last couple of weeks. And, like, I expect that to bounce back. But it further emphasized to me, like, oh, this offense has to be elite for this to be a functional basketball team. Because if this offense slides at all, it's a whole bunch of bad. Trey started the year shooting poorly, but playing generally well. Then the shot came back. This is while Jalen was out. Shot came back while he was still playing well. And I was like, hey, we should probably give more respect to Trae Young, what he's doing. And now he's still playing hard. Like, I still want to give him the fact that he is competing defensively. But, like, even that praise can only go so far. Because, again, I think it is objectively true. I think Trae Young is having the best defensive season of his career. I do not feel like Trae Young is dogging on defense this year. On video, you call me dumb if you want. I don't feel like that has been Trae Young this year. It has now just gone into, okay, he's trying, but the reality is reality. He is still small. And so when he is in the weak side corner, he has to be the tag guy. It's still just tough because he's 5'11", 6 foot. There's only so much he can do. And when he's involved in pick and rolls, like, you kind of have to come up to the level, if not higher. Because ask him to, he tries to navigate, he's not good at it. Which, I guess, backhanded compliment. I'm glad that I can just get to Trae's is not good at it versus is Trae going to try to not. That's a positive. But, like, because of who he is and the way they have to protect him, they kind of, they're in a box schematically, which isn't great. And then the personnel isn't good enough to compensate for that. And then on top of that, there's a lack of physicality and there's just a general learning period with some of these younger guys. Like, am I supposed to help? Do I need to be peeled in? I'm looking at the ball. Oh, snap. My guy's lifting up to the wing. I need to catch up. Someone else is like, oh, snap. He lost his guy. Let me help over here. And now it's a full breakdown. I don't know what you do to fix all of that. And, like, again, a core point of my argument for Jalen coming back was, like, at least with some of the backline stuff, or even when he's directly involved defending a pick and roll, he's really good at anticipating when that pass is coming. If he's directly involved, he can get some deflections. If he's on the back end, he is big. He does have good weak side rim protection chops. He helps your defense. It's also an indictment in and of itself that he's that important to their defense. And he's just now starting. This is year one of the Jalen Johnson starts era. And I feel good about him. He's averaging, what, 16 and 10 since he's been back? Or 16 and 10 since December 26th, rather. And, like, he's been awful, but it's, like, the fact that so much of their success relies on him, it led to me making the argument, but that's an indictment. It shouldn't be that way. And to tie it all back in, because I'm just talking and rambling at this point, but, like, you give up 125 or 126 to the Indiana Pacers without Tyrese Halliburton, and they're driving all over the place. At home. Like, okay, you lost. Lick your chops. Here come the Wizards. You didn't give up 126 to the Washington Wizards the next day at home? I don't know what to do with that. Like, I haven't loved what I've seen from Clint. He's trying, but he doesn't move the same way. Trade the limitations are there. You're putting a lot on Jalen Johnson. Sadiq Bey, bless his heart, as he's now had to take on tougher wing assignments because DeAndre Hunter hasn't been there. And maybe this part perks up when he's inevitably traded, because I just think at this point, something's going to get done in the next month or so. If I see DeJounte Murray fall asleep one more time defensively off the ball, dude, I can't do it. I can't do it. I get a headache watching this Hawks team play defense. I gave the bold prediction. I'll take the L. Hand me the hands are here. You can Photoshop the L in. I can't do it.
Lots of process here, so I'll be brief. So which game broke you, the Wizards or the Pacers?
I mean, the answer is yes, but, like, Wizards game, dog, first possession of the Wizards game was a miss. Washington wins the, I don't even know why this is in my head. Washington wins the jump ball, just walks up court, no pressure whatsoever. Poor Jalen Johnson in the right corner. Kyle Kuzma, I don't even want to call it a Maggette cut. Kyle Kuzma just cuts in front of his face. Jalen's like, oh, snap, there's my guy. Deep post catch. Good on Jalen for getting vertical. Doesn't leave his feet. Kyle Kuzma tosses up a little hook shot. He misses. And I'm just like, this is the attention to detail we are getting 12 seconds into a basketball game in which you just gave up 120 plus to an offense without their best player. I'm sorry. Continue.
So was this inspired by Jimmy Johnson at halftime of the Cowboys game or? Or was it like Michael Irvin post game? Like, which?
Oh, geez. I want them to be inspired by something.
Okay. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and click a like, hit subscribe, comment with your team that you're done with as Nekias is ejected from a take in record time. A lot of bits have been broken right now. The hashtag is Big Mad. No longer Atlanta's very own. Yeah, so I'm going to talk about the players that have impressed me as Nekias gathers himself after those bars. Karl-Anthony Towns. Yeah, month of January, 23-7-3, 50-40-90 splits. He's almost at 50-40-90 for the season. I think he deserves some credit for continuing to work to find it. This was a big year for him. I've liked the aggression, the drives, starting to feel even more comfortable. Facing switches, dealing with wings. For me, the key is just where he catches the ball. If he catches it closer to the rim, it's less of the turbo button. It's more of I could take my time. I could hit you. I could score. So it's been fun. Domantas Sabonis, Nekias, against the Bucks, a game that the Kings lost. 21 points, 15 assists, 13 rebounds, 9 of 10 shooting.
Seems
that,
good.
That was his that was his 22nd straight game with a double-double.
Oh.
So there's five players. Yeah, right? There's five players averaging 20 points, 10 rebounds, or 4 or more assists. Can you name them real quick?
Sabonis, Jokic, Giannis, Embiid?
There's one more.
Shea?
I lowered this one just for you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said Shea. You said rebounds. Luka didn't have the rebounds. Wait, is this... Are we in the Bam zone on this one?
Yes. Bam.
Ah!
Yes. Yes. Now, there are only two players averaging 20 points, 10 rebounds, 5.9 or more assists, and shooting 60% from the field. That's Sabonis and Giannis, and I filtered that so I could have two people. Because if you just raise the assists up, it's just Sabonis. This man is absolutely hooping. You can see the aggression a little bit more on those drives, looking to hit people. It's been fun to watch him play. And I think he's got an all-star campaign that's getting slept on a little bit. Jared Allen.
Yes.
19 points a game, 15 rebounds, 4.9 assists over his last 8 games, 8 straight double-doubles. He's finding a way to impact the game, not just defensively, but offensively. I've liked the aggression. That's a key for Cleveland during this stretch as they're trying to continue to find their way through injuries. But for some reason, they just gained 10 XP whenever everyone's out. So salute to him. And then Tobias Harris.
Yes.
Back-to-back 30-point games for the first time in his career. Just want to give him a quick hat tip there. Before you give me yours, can I ask one quick question?
Yeah, what's up?
So we record on Monday. Are you prepared for Trae Young to have like 40-10 and beat the Spurs on MLK Day? Because Atlanta's won 3 straight.
I'd love to see it. I would love to see it. I'd love to see it. Trae's been great, man. Like I think Trae should be an all-star still. Like again, this is Hawks commentary, not Trae commentary. Not that he's been perfect during the stretch. Again, he hasn't shot well over the last recent bit. But I'd love to see it. Now, if this is a Hawks win and the Spurs drop like 128 or something, we don't have to have another discussion. But, yeah, I'd love to see it.
Okay.
All right. Well, very quickly on my shout-out, since we're running low on time, Pascal Siakam, averaging 26, 5-5 since Christmas. He is shooting nearly 61% from 3 during that stretch, shooting about 60% from the field overall. Slow start, kind of a wonky start as we're talking about Toronto's offense schematically and how he's fitting in, Raptors prioritizing Scottie Barnes, etc. He has very firmly found his groove. It felt like the worst three-point shooting season of his career until this recent stretch, and now I guess everything's just normalizing now because he's been on an absolute heater. I would like for the defense to bounce back a little bit more than what I've seen as of late, but I feel like that's just a Toronto issue, period. Hat tip to Steve on that one. But just wanted to give Pascal a hat tip for finding his way within the new offense. Talked about Jalen Williams a little bit earlier for OKC. The wing, 25-6 since Christmas, shooting nearly 62% from 3 on low volume, about 3 attempts, 63% from the field overall. The actual number that I cited, well, I want to cite the actual number on the drive thing, 1.21 points per possession on trips featuring a Jalen Williams drive since Christmas. That is fourth among 42 players with at least 100 drives. The top 3 since Christmas. Colin Sexton from the Utah Jazz. Seems fitting with the drives hitting there in Utah. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I wonder why he's up there. Cade Cunningham. Please come back, Cade. Would like to see you play basketball once again. Since I mentioned the Pacers derogatory, I should compliment TJ McConnell for filling in admirably. 8 points, 9 assists over his last 3 games without Tyrese Halliburton. Still kind of off the bench, but the drives have been very important for him. The Pacers have won his minutes over these last 3 games by 29 points. Also, just a very quick note, not going to go like dive on this one since we're getting close to the end here. The Pacers are 9-2 since Christmas. Like, that should probably get a little bit more pub, especially in light of Tyrese being out. Like, they have been winning games and are firmly in the playoff hunt right now. It's like that whole, like, what, like 4-7 thicket of teams. Indiana's right there. Just want to give them props. Trey Jones, averaging 12-5-5. Shooting nearly 57% from the field overall since Christmas. On the season as a whole, the Spurs have a +7 net rating in nearly 400 minutes with Trey Jones and Wimby on the floor together. And as I mentioned on the old man, the three things, 1.07 points per possession on trips featuring a Trey Jones, Victor Wembanyama pick and roll is one of the better marks in the NBA among duos with at least 100. Trey Jones is just steady, man. Some may call him a top 25 point guard. But that's neither here nor there. Want to give two more to close this thing out. Nikola Jovic, who has started the last 6 games for Miami. I've been intrigued by his skill set. My big thing with him was, one, what kind of burn slash usage would he actually get with this veteran group? And two, what position does he guard? He has been competing. Miami has slotted him around a lot of different places while also playing him in some zone over this recent stretch. He's holding up admirably. I still have like the Shea possessions burned in my head where it's like, oh, that's a nice contest. Oh, wait, there's another mid-range bucket from Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. That's just tough. But Shea does that to everyone. But he's really working defensively and then offensively, shooting nearly 42% from three, averaging 8, 6, and 3 overall. Not gaudy numbers, but the processing speed on that dude. He moves the ball. He moves it well. You get to him from the perimeter. Again, the shooting has been there, but also very comfortable pumping and driving and making quick and sound decisions on the drive as a passer as well. He's been really solid. And then very quickly, Steve, what do you think Nikola Jokic is shooting from the field over his last 9 games?
87%.
Close. He is shooting 81% from the field over his last 9 games. He's basically averaging 23-10-10. What the heck? What the heck are we supposed to do with that?
Enjoy it.
Yeah. 25-12-9 against Indy, 12-13 from the field. Like, it just, I don't know, man. He always has the efficiency stuff. The earlier this year, he had, what, the two-game stretch of, like, the worst shooting of his career. He just missed every floater and layup known to man. And it's like, since then, he's like, yeah, we're not going to do that whole missing thing anymore, actually. Let me just put the ball in hoop while also passing and rebounding and racking up over 2 stops a game. And just what he, as you mentioned earlier, Denver's coming. Did you have any free throws?
Yes. Before I get to it, I will inform you of some news.
Okay.
Per Shams, San Antonio's Victor Wembanyama plans to commit to participate in the Skills Challenge at NBA All-Star Weekend in Indianapolis.
Oh.
So I'm start with this. Better meme potential. Wembanyama at the Skills Challenge or Rudy Gobert at the free throw line?
Hey, dog. Related note. Why Clippers bench did him like that? What? Rudy hit some big ones late, so he got his get back. But like, also, big dog. Meme potential is probably going to be, I think that's just going to, you're going to laugh at Rudy. But like, meme potential probably Wimby. Because like, even if he does well, we're going to get like a steel shot of him doing like the bounce pass. And his arms are going to be like 3 inches away from the darn thing. He just dropped ball in net. So I think it's going to be Wimby for meme potential.
Okay. I was just going to say, Rudy got his, he got some blocks, hit some big free throws. He's here this year. I will give him his credit there. Who did it better, Darko with bars or Mike Brown with film?
Steve, I promise you, I was so close. I have my laptop right here. I was so close to just bringing up that freaking Washington Atlanta possession. Like, you see here? I almost did it. And I was like, I don't want to put our dear producer through that. I don't know if that's going to show well. If it's going to be all pixelated and stuff. So I ain't going to do that. But Mike Brown, my brother in hoop. Well done. because I didn't see that portion of it live. I was able to catch some of the end of that game. But then someone tagged me in the tweet, and it's like, man, he went full Nekias NBA, Darius film. I was like, oh no, what happened? That was so much better than anything I had in mind when I saw that tweet. This man actually brought the laptop to the post-game presser with pressed play. Like, you see here, you see the hand. You see De'Aaron Fox's hand on the hip, et cetera. That's tremendous. I want to go ahead and end the pod shortly just before we miss the fine announcement. He's absolutely going to get fined for that. But, oh, man, that was funny. That was so funny.
So better defender, Simone Fontecchio or Bojan Bogdanović?
It is Simone for me.
Okay. All right. So one of these is a violation, I guess. I understand. We'll get the meme together. Don't worry about it. What's funnier, Giannis working to credit Chris Middleton before saying he'd never seen anyone make a shot like Dame's game winner, or Thanasis on the bench literally holding his shooting form as Dame shot?
Thanasis is a treasure, man. What a guy.
Awesome. Does that replace Andre Drummond?
I'm here for it. Like, it's funny, but I'm genuinely here for bench antics, though. Like, I'd much rather see that than guys staring off into distance wanting to get into the game. Like, that's cool. I don't think it replaces Andre Drummond. Like, that man was in character. It's even funnier when you think about, like, the actual Andre Drummond post-up stats. But, like, yeah, like, that was a whole, that was a vibe. I'll give it to him.
Okay. When are we hooping in the Indianapolis International Airport?
Okay, so, as respectfully as I know how, right? Because I've seen the announcement, seen the pictures, I've seen the tweets, and thus I've seen now the jokes. And, like, there's a particular brand of joke. I understand why it's funny. Can we just leave that one alone in this country in particular? Let's just drop that one. Beyond that, though, no, we should not be trying to play full games of basketball before a flight, and now he's got a whole bunch of stank on the flight. We don't need that. That's not what we need. That's not what we need. Let's not do that. Let's not do that. Take your pictures and don't do that.
Okay. So would you rather sit next to someone who just played 5-on-5 at the airport or sit in the middle seat next to someone who didn't?
That's nasty work. That's real nasty. I hate every bit of what you just did there. So I guess, like, I'm trying to visualize this. So is this like me in my typical aisle seat and then someone sweaty in the middle seat?
Yeah. No, yeah. Yeah, somebody's right next to you. Just about 4 for 20. And got hungry. brought some pizza on the plane too.
Brought some pizza. Nah, dog. That's diabolical. Can I be honest with you? Can I be 100% honest with you? At that rate, I'm probably making up something to get them off the plane. You can't do that. That is not of Christ. You can't do that. No. The answer is no. Okay. Absolutely not.
It's perfect. My last one before you get us out of here. Is Baker Mayfield about to hurt your feelings?
Man, I hope not. We can close on the football note. You know how annoyed I was waking up this morning to two different Philly pieces? Tim McManus is like, well, let's get the inside look at all of the dysfunction in this locker room. And then I think Jeff McClain in the Philly Inquirer is like, well, you know, some Philly people on the inside wish that Jalen was more outspoken. Let's talk about his leadership style. I was like, why are we doing this on game day? Anyway, go Birds.
Perfect.
Baker Mayfield may hurt my feelings. He won't hurt my feelings more than my own team has this year. Thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. Naturally, if you're watching this on YouTube, we thank you. But also, if you're not subscribed to JJ Redick's YouTube channel, you should probably subscribe to JJ Redick's YouTube channel. We will be here every Tuesday. That is every Tuesday. But Also, there's just a bunch of great content on the channel, so you should check that out. You don't want to miss stuff from JJ and the guests that he has on, et cetera, et cetera. You can follow me on Twitter at NakaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. And I also owe everyone an apology because somehow in like copying and pasting the description stuff as I typed it out, I forgot to add the link last week. So that's a big no-no on my front. So I will make sure that that is in the description this time, as I said at the end of the pod, as it normally is. But link to the online Dunker Spot watch parties will be in the description. For the audio listeners, if it's hyperlinked, just click on that, enter your information. It is free, no shenanigans. If you have a League Pass account / cable account, just enter your info there. It's easy. You can come rock with us. We're watching games live. We're breaking things down live. If we have end of game / overtime stuff, Steve's going through clips telling you why this play did or didn't work. We had a lot of fun at the end of that Lakers-Raptors game that turned into not a lot of fun, but also a whole lot of fun getting into some of the stuff that happened at the end of that one. But in general, if you want to watch basketball with us, learn some stuff, and also just let your hair down and talk about life, we do that too. We invite people up on stage. We just chop it up. It's a real laid-back vibe. So come rock with us if you want to do that. But with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Great show, Nakaias. Get ready to learn Teach Me How to Dougie, buddy.